is Bathrobe Spears Broadsides. Sorry about that high volume level. You are listening to Free Radio Santa Cruz 96.3. Today is October 9th, 1995, Monday morning. This show will be running for 3 hours. You're going to be listening to me. I'm Bathrobe Spear Robert Norse. And you'll also be hearing another voice, that of badass Becky Johnson, as I call her. Becky has a whole range of credentials here. She is a television talk show host for Community Perspectives. That's Channel 71. She's a former teacher. She's an artist and a mother of 3 children. She is, on top of this, a welfare rights activist, recently a member of the Free Ray McMahon Committee, for those of you who know Ray, a man who's being harassed by authorities on the East Coast, longstanding worker for the Homeless Garden Project on the board of directors of the, I believe it's the Citizens Committee for the Homeless.
Mm-hmm.
That's the Ray McMahon. However, we're talking about Becky Johnson. She's a proponent of the Medical Marijuana Initiative, a member of the Baha'i Faith, and I quote her own words, let's not be modest, a pretty damn good rollerblader. Becky, why don't you sign in and talk more?
Hi. You forgot a couple things. I'm also a spokesperson member of the Coalition to Recall Danner.
Oh, yes. How could I forget?
Uh-huh. Yeah, I don't like to take wimpy issues on, you know. When you recall the DA, I went, hey, that sounds like...
Badass Becky Johnson. That's a job for you, yeah.
I don't know about this title of yours, Robert.
Yeah, nobody likes my titles. It's my own personal foolishness. What can I say?
Okay, well, I'll join the club of objectors to your title.
Cool.
Very nice to be here today on Free Radio Santa Cruz. I prefer the name Radio Free Santa Cruz instead of Free Radio Santa Cruz, and it's just a personal thing because many years ago when I was a high school student, I was the editor of an underground newspaper, and it was called Radio Free America. Now it's in Rochester, Michigan.
Yeah, I wasn't here last month.
So it sort of feels like old times coming to Free Radio Santa Cruz, okay. And or Radio Free Santa Cruz, as I prefer.
So, Becky, I just answered a phone call there, and I was a little bit taken away. I missed the last thing you said, so say a little more.
Well, I just had the little tidbit for our listeners.
Come a little closer.
Closer, I don't know.
Closer, Becky, that's right, yes, good.
To the microphone, I assume.
Anything you'd like to come closer to, but the microphone is the most obvious candidate here, yes.
Yeah. Well, you had asked, you wanted to hear some more about what's going on with Ray McMahon, and I'd be glad to fill you in.
Sure, why don't we start with Ray? Before you do, though, let me tell our audience that we're going to be doing a lot of discussing of items in the news. I'm going to be giving you some updates, and you'll be hearing some of the, I think they're called the Berkeley Players. That's Carol Denny's Berkeley Comedy Troupe. We have a new tape from them. We're going to be kind of spicing up the show with a few of those items, and I may even try to find some music. But tell me more about Ray McMahon. First of all, tell our audience, for those who don't know who Ray is, and give us something about his background.
Mm-hmm. Well, Ray was born in California, but he lived out in Virginia for a while, and right after he had gotten out of the service at the scant age, I think it was 22 or something years old, he committed an armed robbery. He robbed $8 from a guy he knew and didn't like with an unloaded gun. He was immediately arrested. The trial lasted 15 minutes. The jury, it was a jury trial. The jury deliberated for 8 minutes.
Jeez.
And they came back with a sentence of 40 years in Virginia State Prison.
They were ahead of their time, it sounds like.
Yeah, I think some of those legislators must have moved out to California since 1970. Ray went to prison, and he served 14 and a half years for this crime. And he wasn't your typical prisoner either. When he was, from what I've heard, when he was in prison, he grouped together with some other inmates to enact a series of reforms. One of the things was that at that time, prisoners were never allowed to use a telephone and call out. So he was one of the people that was able to change that policy so that inmates could have some contact with the outside world. They also were able to get visitors to come in and have contact visits. You know, as opposed to, say, that if you were going to go down and visit someone down here in Santa Cruz at the county jail, you have to go through a metal detector and be searched and go through a number of checkpoints, and finally you come into a little dark room with no outside windows, and through very thick glass you can see the person that you're visiting. There's no possibility for you to hug that person or to touch them or to interact with them in any kind of a normal way. That was how it was in this prison in Virginia where Ray was at, and these and various other things, very poor food, poor living conditions, resulted in a very high rate of violence behind the bars. One of the first reforms Ray was able to initiate was to have them keep ambulances inside the prison walls, because the hospital was so far away that the inmates would knife each other, strangle, and they'd be bleeding, and they would die of blood loss on the way to the hospital. It would take so long for ambulance to get out there and get back. So that was one of the first reforms he did. So, you know, Ray has always been working, as far as I can tell, on behalf of alleviating suffering and improving living conditions.
What state was this in, Becky, this prison?
This is Virginia. I think it was Roanoke, Virginia.
Yeah, you know, about the time Ray probably got convicted, there was, maybe it was afterward. Virginia was one of the last states to drop its miscegenation laws, which involved criminalizing sexual behavior between whites and non-whites. But that's just a sidelight.
It's a very enlightened state, Virginia.
Oh, yeah, extremely light-headed state.
So, in 1989, Ray was out of prison. He was on parole in Virginia. And we had an earthquake here, October 17th, 89. Ray had a sister who he had lost touch with. But he, as far as he knew, she was living in Santa Cruz at the time. And he panicked when he heard about the earthquake here. And he dropped everything in Virginia and came to California, to Santa Cruz, to look for his sister. Well, it turned out to be a rather poor decision for him economically. He didn't know anyone here. He ran out of money. He's off and on had a problem with alcohol abuse, and which he slipped back into, and he became a homeless person on the streets in the city of Santa Cruz for a number of years.
That was a hard period to be homeless too. The authorities were cracking down on homeless people because of the homeless demonstrations, as well as the city's predilection for making sure homeless people stayed out of sight. From 89 to 91, 92, particularly 89, 90, the police were confiscating people's backpack and bedding when they were engaged in protest at the homeless table down at the post office. And there was no legal place for people to sleep.
Yeah. Well, Ray was typical of a lot of homeless people, and he accumulated a lot of camping ban tickets and open container things and just little nuisance kind of crimes. But, of course, for a person who has no money to pay fines with, it just started adding up for him. I think around around 5 years ago, he came in contact with the Homeless Garden Project, which had been started by Dr. Paul Lee and others, and he started to work with them, and Ray began to change his life around. He first worked with the Homeless Garden Project as a worker, and then he started helping other homeless people as his situation improved. And now, you know, he's gotten to the point where he dedicates about, he works for the Homeless Garden Project, I think it's like 20 hours a week where he receives some payment. But he also donates another 15 hours a week of public service, and just because he loves the garden so much and believes in its purpose of being there for the homeless people in our community.
Yeah, I remember Ray from work with the Free Meal and the Interfaith Satellite Shelter Program, and I was, when I was doing organizing, I was sort of, Ray would, he sort of took an older, elder statesman view of my activities. He would kind of, he didn't get involved too deeply in what I was doing, but he was there keeping an eye on things, and he, most recently, I knew him through his work on the Downtown Mediators, I think it's, we called ourselves the Downtown Mediation Group. We actually formed an ad hoc committee in the summer to deal with problems that had come up immediately between merchants and other people, but mostly poor people. Georgiana's Cafe, right next to Coonerty's Bookshop, Santa Cruz, had thrown out a woman for allegedly displaying jewelry on one of their tables, and there was a great controversy about this. Some of us wanted to demonstrate, but I and others suggested instead we form a committee to mediate, and that mediation was successful. The woman selling the jewelry or displaying the jewelry, or the woman who was in the cafe, was allowed back in on an understanding that she not display jewelry. And the downtown group had Ray as one of its main members, and we had just begun when suddenly we learned that, hey, Ray was in jail. What was that all about? I mean, what happened after that?
Well, I don't know if a lot of people know this, but Ray lost his mother earlier this spring, and he took it pretty hard. And after the death of his mother, he had an incident where he had gone back to drinking, something that has caused him problems in the past. And the police were called with drunken disorderly. They took him to jail, and then we found out when he was in jail that he had an outstanding warrant from the state of Virginia for a parole violation.
An outstanding warrant for an outstanding gun.
And I guess, you know, for the drunken disorderly, he served a couple days or something, and he was completely free of any charges in Santa Cruz. And then it starts to get funny. We're not really sure exactly what happened. Somebody had to go, from the district attorney's office, had to go down and refile some charges against Ray. Now, we don't know if they were compelled to do so, whether they chose to do so, if this is standard operating procedure. It's fuzzy. We can't seem to get a clear story.
D.A.R. Danner's office, fuzzy? No, I
didn't. Then we heard another rumor that there had been a deal struck between the district attorney's office in Virginia and the district attorney's office in Santa Cruz, that kind of like, if you'll extradite our guy, we'll extradite one of your guys. So when I tried to find out some more information about that, all of a sudden it was, there's no deal, we never make deals like that.
So in other words, they were holding Ray on this, what,
25-year-old crime.
A parole violation,
mm-hmm.
from a sentence he'd already served.
14 and a half years for.
Mm-hmm. And they were holding him in jail and held him ultimately for 66 days.
Three years of that was done in the hole.
This is solitary
confinement.
And in Santa Cruz, he served 66 days while the DA played around with this stuff.
Yeah, they kind of, they couldn't find any fingerprints on Ray from, you know, Virginia. Virginia didn't seem to have their paperwork act together at all. They had a picture, a 25-year-old picture. And
he'd still be in jail if some parties hadn't raised his bail, namely Daryl Darling, right?
That's exactly what happened. Because Virginia just did not come and get him in a timely manner, it went back into Judge Kelsey's court, and then Judge Kelsey decided to reduce the bail considerably. Daryl Darling put up the money so that...
Daryl Darling is the head of the community house project, which I oppose, of the Citizens Committee for the Homeless, oppose in the sense that the community house is currently about to boot out the open-air shelter, and as indicated, we'll go ahead and build regardless of whether the open-air shelter, which houses lots of homeless people, can find another place or not. But Daryl Darling is also a very civic-minded man who, in this instance, is definitely to be commended for stepping forward and helping out Ray. How much was the bail, anyway?
It's $1,000, but Daryl did a lot more than that. He was in daily communication with the district attorney's office, and it seems to me that the situation changed from where the DA's office was attempting to get Ray extradited and trying to facilitate that, to where they told Daryl that they had two people working full-time attempting to stop the extradition. So,
good work, Daryl. Keep it.
Yeah.
That's great. So he's currently at large, this notorious criminal.
Yes.
Ray McMahon. If you see him, be on the lookout for Ray. And, you know.
Yes. Well, you know, I think Ray, you know, here we passed this dubious milestone recently where we have over 1 million people behind bars in the United States for some crime or another. And this, you know, a 25-year-old crime where no one was hurt, where restitution was completely paid, where the severity of the punishment, 40 years in state imprisonment, way outweighed the severity of the crime, for a person who, by anyone's standard, would be considered rehabilitated. You know, I mean, how many people listening donate 15 hours of public service each week that's not court-ordered?
Hey, I do. Well,
some people might not call it a service,
some
but
people
you do.
But,
and we can name names, too.
We can begin at the beginning and go to the end. So how can people help Ray in terms of, let's say, contributing to his, I don't know, is Daryl looking for, is that $1,000 been lost, or was it put up as a block grant?
No, Daryl should get all that back as long as Ray returns to court as he's directed. Oh, by the way, there is, the way people can help is that there's a hearing, I think it's like 8 in the morning on October 12th in Judge Kelsey's court. So we invite everyone to come out and see what Judge Kelsey is going to do with Ray McMinn.
So that's Thursday? Is that the 12th Thursday or is the 12th Friday? Today is the 9th, 10th, 11th. 12th must be Thursday. And that's, yeah. I guess, it's actually probably 8:15, but it could be 8, I guess. Usually the earliest these judges even claim to get up is 8:15. Kelsey's court is Department 4, for those of you who are interested. That's in the county courthouse building. Supporters are, you know, I think almost always welcome, and you might also get an educational view of your system of just us at work. So do consider showing up, and if you want more information about this case, maybe there's a number you can call.
Oh, that could be. If I had one, I'd give one.
Really? You don't want people to call you?
At home, not necessarily. You can call the Homeless Garden Project and leave a number for myself, Becky Johnson, there, and I'll get back to you.
And if you're homeless and you just want to find out more information, of course, you can listen to this show, or you can show up at Taco Bell at 9:45 on Mondays and Fridays.
Happening place, Pacific Avenue.
That's where you come to get on the show, incidentally, in case of, for all you folks that are just waiting to get at the mic and get a punch at me, get a piece of me. Come on, let's go. Come on, here you guys, you gals, let's go. But, no, you can also call 423-HUFF, 423-4833, which is my home phone in case you want to more information about this. Again, you have to leave some kind of contact number, but I believe the Homeless Day Resource Center has a number that you can use, which supposedly is available to homeless people, those without houses, guys without phones, women without stereos. Well, you get the idea.
The lucky ones.
Yeah, those who are outside.
Yeah, experience the beauty of our world.
You know, you're talking about the prison situation, and I often avoid national and state issues because I hear so much liberal blather about them. And then
let's talk about the Santa Cruz County Jail a little bit.
I'd like to hear about the Santa Cruz County Jail, but before we do, I kind of scrounged through my clippings while you were talking.
Oh.
And I found an October 2nd letter.
You're such a good scrounger,
Robert. Thank you, Becky. yes. October 2nd letter from the Chronicle, which you may have seen in the papers, those of you who are reading the papers these days, that there's been a drop in the crime rate from 93 to 94.
Oh, no, it can't be.
A drop in the crime rate.
Tell me
of course,
it's not so.
Governor Wilson, no doubt, is going to claim, or has already claimed, I'm not sure, that this is an indication of the great success of his three strikes and we're out policy, sometimes miscalled the three strikes and you're out policy. It's actually knocking us all out. It's going to drain our pocketbooks, eviscerate our consciences, and totally misdirect our energies.
Not to mention cause untold suffering in the lives of the people that are ground up by this system,
right,
and their
families.
Pick out
the violent criminals and put in the burglars, that sort of thing. It's grotesque. And unfortunately, appellate court decisions have made it worse. Judges who are attempting to, shall we say, kind of tone down third offenses when they're obviously not violent, because you don't need a violent third felony, you just need a serious felony for, the three strikes and you're out, life in prison for the third strike to go into effect, which is our current California law. So anyway, I'm concerned that Wilson, if not, he's already said this, other supporters of the three strikes and you're out are claiming that the drop in the crime rate indicates the success of the three strikes law. And here is a letter writer who thinks otherwise, and she's Nanine Carriker of the Criminal Justice Consortium in Oakland. I don't know her. I haven't called her. I don't know who the Criminal Justice Consortium is. But it interested me enough to pass it on to you. And it reads as follows. Crime rates in California may be dropping, but three strikes is not the reason for the decline. Contrary to what Attorney General Dan Lundgren would have us believe, the decline in crime rates began in 1992, 2 years before we ever heard of three strikes. The sub-headline on your article, Crime Rate Drops Again in California, September 26th, about the shrinking state crime rate, should have read, Dispute about the role of three strikes in decline, rather than three strikes cited as the reason for decline. Readers had to wade deep into the article to learn that responsible people, such as State Assemblyman Phil Eisenberg, disagree with Lundgren's faulty reasoning. The drop in California crime rates follows a national trend that is more closely tied to a decline in the percentage of 17 to 35-year-old males in the population. Most people involved in the street crime are 17 to 35-year-old males. Again, the letter from Nanine Carriker, Criminal Justice Consortium, Oakland. What's your reading?
Careful, Robert. Now they're going to want to put all the 17 to 35-year-olds in prison.
Well, I mean, yeah, but last week, Mayor Jordan, Juggernaut Jordan of San Francisco, initiated successfully, ran through a curfew so that not only are people under 18 out of luck, if you're under 125, you're now out of luck, because if you try to go in Golden Gate Park at night, that's criminal, unless you have a bicycle or a car. Isn't that exciting?
Yeah, those pedestrian losers again.
It's grotesque, and various groups have been fighting it, including the Religious Witnesses, who did a sleep out there on Thursday night, and of course the police didn't want to arrest these church people. They're just going to arrest the poor people who come through and the activists.
You know what it is, Robert? It's these guys are always talking about us and them, but there's this them that's out there, these scruffy homeless people, these welfare moochers, these illegal immigrants, these Arab terrorists, or somebody that's not us. And it's faulty logic. There is no them. We're one human family. We're all us. There are no thems. And until our leaders and legislators get that message and start acting accordingly, we're going to have a lot of human suffering that's unnecessary.
Well, I don't know if I agree with you. I think there is a them. I think the them are the people who control the money and the wealth and the power in our society. And they are the real people we should be targeting.
Mm-hmm.
And the people that should be dispossessed of their ill-gotten booty. And the fact that it's such an obvious target means that other targets have to be found in order to displace people's anger, whether it be Japan, immigrants, homeless people, drug users, you name it. There has to be another target for that anger. When you find that your wage is shrinking and shrinking, when you find that your rent is rising and rising, when you find that the work you're doing is meaningless, that your health care is evaporating, you know, it's who do you blame? Well, you obviously should blame the people that are racking the profits off of these declines. But in fact, it's much more exciting to salute the LAPD and march right along and blame instead those the people in the shadows, the stranger.
Boy, that O.J. Simpson trial was a lot of great PR for the LAPD, wouldn't you say?
Oh yeah, it's interesting. I was listening to the talk commentators, of course, they're either lionizing the defense team or else they're just viciously attacking the jury. And instead of the jury, of course, claims that their decision on the OJ case was based on the evidence, that even though it looked like he was guilty, perhaps there was reasonable doubt. Their job was to find reasonable doubt or to find guilt beyond a reasonable doubt.
Well, I think they believed that it was entirely possible for the LAPD to plant evidence on an innocent person. There's been enough of a track record for that who can believe them? We can't go just on their word. That's not enough evidence.
Indeed, and I that actually has provoked a lot of positive analysis in the papers, and also I think police departments throughout the country. Mm-hmm. I don't know about the SCPD here, and in fact we can start talking about that, which I think is more pertinent to us. A lot of police departments in the country have been very concerned about suddenly dealing with some of the more flagrant abuses. San Francisco, there's a notorious case that I want to bring up later, but you were going to talk about the jail system here. Tell me something about the jail system in recent years here in Santa Cruz and what we should know about it that maybe we don't know.
Well, there are two things I'd like to mention. First, that it's tremendously overcrowded. It was not designed to hold, it's holding not quite double the capacity for which it was designed. And of course, those powers that be have decided to open up another jail in Watsonville to take the overflow. A comment that Supervisor Marty Wormhout said, jails are like freeways. The more you build, the more they fill up. And I think that's true. But unfortunately, what we have a trend here in California where we don't have as many of these lucrative defense contracts that we've had historically. So basically, the same players have sort of turned over their energies and are building a prison industry in California, which generates a lot of income for them. And guess where that money comes from? Pockets of the taxpayers.
Yeah. The continuing turnaround in taxation, where poor people and middle-income people pay more and rich are paying less, of course, is now directly related to the seizure of the means of power by conservative legislators both in Sacramento and in Washington. And I'm hoping to go into that a little bit more later in the show in terms of two bills that were recently passed in Sacramento that levy more taxes against us, take away more services, not too much covered by the mainstream media.
Well, the tax system in California has been weighted unfairly in favor of the rich since Proposition 13 passed back in 1978.
Probably even before that, I would say.
Well, it was a pretty major turnaround. You can see that a lot of the beginning of the decline happened after that, certainly in our educational system. And in 1980 especially was a banner year for when we started to see an erosion of all kinds of programs and social services we had become used to having, things like libraries and hospitals and good roads, those sorts of things.
Let me throw in an unpaid political announcement. You're listening to 96.3 FM, Free Radio Santa Cruz. The call-in number here, and you are invited to call in. I'll ask Becky to keep an eye on the phone that should start blinking if and when you do call in, is 427-3772 or 427-FRSC, 427-3772. We have open lines. We're looking for some open mouths, so come on, pick up that phone.
Okay, I'm in favor of repealing Proposition 13, but as I recall some of the debate that went on at that time, it was a time where property values had gone had a major increase, and there were a lot of people who maybe they bought their home for $35,000, and then on paper their house was assessed at $250,000, and they now had to pay taxes based on that new assessed value. And I can understand their concern and maybe even outrage at the time and their eagerness to vote for Proposition 13.
Which froze the property taxes, right?
Yeah, at 1%.
Mm-hmm.
So what I would like to do is repeal Proposition 13 but exempt all owner-occupied dwellings. For instance, if you know, even if you lived in a mansion, you wouldn't have to pay taxes. If that was your home, that's where you lived, you would not have to pay taxes on it. However, if you had a rental property, you would pay taxes on it. If you had a business, you would pay taxes on it. If you were a huge agribusiness that had millions of acres of land, you'd pay a lot of taxes. And the reason that it's fair to put the tax base back on property is no one can hide property. Everyone knows where it is. You know, I have a map which shows you where all the property is. and rich people have more property than poor people. Rich people need to carry a larger load of the tax base than poor people. It's fair. And reasonable, and it would solve. We could collect sufficient taxes to start bringing these deficits down.
Do you know much about the local tax situation here in Santa Cruz and who pays what and what percentage of the people pay what Sahuzi and that sort of thing?
I'm not as versed on local taxes. Any tax issue becomes a kind of a heated issue.
Well,
nobody wants
Carol
more
Busenhardt
taxes.
Carol Busenhardt in here and see what she has. Our local expert.
Well, I mean, it's reasonable for the people in a democracy to raise money through taxes to fund those kinds of services that we all agree we want and need.
Oh yeah. Well, you know, you just kind of skip to another topic here. Your new position is sort of semi-head hunches at the community television.
Yes.
Has been noted by those who watch television. I don't, but
I
have
a meteoric rise from. I was sweeping the floors 3 weeks ago, and now I have my own TV show.
She has her own TV show, folks. And when is that TV show for those of you who want to know?
It's on Channel 71, Tuesdays between 6 and 7 p.m.
And you interview leading figures like RoboCop Mike Rotkin.
I have not yet interviewed him. Well, no, actually, I have not on the show as a guest.
I guess because your previous, your predecessor interviewed him.
We'll be having our 38th show Tuesday night, yeah. Joe Grossman has left the show, and I have taken his spot, so to speak.
Indeed. Time marches on. Are there any topics or any guests coming up that might be of interest to folks concerned about civil liberties and the poor in Santa Cruz?
Well, our guest Tuesday night is Doug Kaplan. And he's with the militias.
Arm the poor. We need some poor militias. You know, it's interesting. In 1988, when I was doing a homeless table on the streets trying to petition the city council for changes in the sleeping ban and public restrooms and a police review process that was outside the police department, Lieutenant Larson, gave a confidential memo to Chief Bassett that claimed that I was soliciting funds to arm the street people. Not a bad idea, perhaps. But, you know, actually, I know very little about weapons. I've never owned a weapon, so I'm not really much of an expert on that. But for those of you who do wish to arm the street people, perhaps you should listen into this militia show tomorrow night.
It's a live show. It's a call-in show. So if you feel so motivated to call in and ask a question about militias or local citizens arming themselves, the pros and cons of that, or maybe even some of the aftermath of the Oklahoma City bombing, which was blamed on a militia group in Michigan, please feel free to call in. Don't stifle yourself.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's another example of how poor people suffer because of their very position legally and socially and in reality. In our society, not only can you not sleep outside, not only is it becoming illegal to eat outside here in San Francisco. Food Not Bombs, by the way, goes to trial tomorrow. I think some 40-odd Food Not Bombs members, Food Not Bombs is an organization in San Francisco that feeds poor people and has been opposed by Mayor Jordan because it makes poverty visible.
I love the title.
Food, not bombs.
Yeah, a good idea there.
Definitely a good idea and a good action, too.
I'm definitely pro-food and against bombs.
Good point. Yeah, actually, that's the reason they chose it. It seemed like a very simple kind of way of describing what they were doing and what they wanted for the country. It's not merely it's a charity organization concerned with providing soup kitchen-type activities, but it's also wants to turn the entire country around, stop waste in the city, stop military.
It's also
military.
Very delicious food, I might add.
Every Wednesday at 4 at Cathcart and Pacific.
Not just
here in Santa Cruz.
Not just food that's okay or fills your
stomach. Every Saturday and Sunday at 1
it's
o'clock
like
at River and
Joe's. Delicious cuisine. It just tastes healthy,
Tuesday,
nutritious.
At 11 o'clock at Loudoun Park.
And karmically sound food.
Food Not Bombs, 425-3345. Call in and volunteer. And I sound a little whimsical as I say this, but I'm quite serious. They need volunteers. But what I was saying was, if I can remember it, my goodness, I've lost these long, tangled sentences. What was I talking about? Do you remember what I was talking about? We've forgotten what I was talking about.
The court case in San Francisco.
Oh, I mentioned the Food Not Bombs, in fact. Uh-huh. That was sort of a peripheral side as well. Uh-huh. Tomorrow, not only is Mumi Abu-Jamal going to get another one of his kangaroo court hearings in Pennsylvania, but Food Not Bombs in San Francisco will get its ass trashed, so to speak, will get its back beaten, for a peaceful demonstration with respect to Clinton when he came to town during the UN 25th anniversary celebration. 50th anniversary
celebration. We could talk a little bit about Clinton if you'd like.
Well, I'd rather not give the man a minute. We could talk about him in a minute, but let me finish. This was all part of something
else.
Oh,
you're going somewhere.
Going somewhere.
Okay, go,
I'm
Robert.
Looking back, trying to recall where I was going. Boy, how embarrassing to lose my train of thought. Maybe I can pick up that train later, but let's hope the train comes back to the station at some point. Those of you can ponder this. Maybe next show when I replay these tapes, I'll be able to remember.
Let me tell you about my trip to see Clinton when he came to dedicate the CSUMB, former Ford Ord.
Oh, Monterey Peninsula's new college.
Right.
Is this related to poor people and civil liberties?
Well,
I'm
sort of
media groupieing here.
Civil liberties, yeah.
Yeah,
I think civil liberties comes in under this the title of this particular.
By the way, if you want to make a call in anything we said so far, do give a call to 427-3772. Lines are open, and Becky, you're keeping a weather eye on the phone here.
Oh, yes, I'm watching it. Call. Light up.
Call in.
Come on, call.
Call now.
We want to hear from you.
Right.
So, this was my first experience covering a presidential visit, and Charlie Phillips and myself went down to Monterey with our presidential press passes and things. It was very weird. When we got to the event, the press was shuffled way off miles away from where anybody else was. We had to show up at a very early time. We went through all the metal detectors and the searches and everything. They were searching us more heavily for banners and placards than they were high-powered rifles and explosives.
Actually, that's better than the Food Not Bombs trials, where they search people for food. So they're afraid you're going to criminally give away food in the courtroom. They stopped one woman at my trial when I was tried a year and a half ago for serving free food because she had... It was little baby treats for her baby.
Oh,
they took the baby treats away from her, and they claimed, this is true, folks, that she was going to be distributing that food illegally.
Mm. Boy, you don't want to pass a cert to someone.
certain arrest if you pass a cert.
So we had, after we had gone through this checkpoint, then we were sort of held in this one location. This is all the press. Way far away from where any of the protesters were, and there were quite a few protesters that went down also to greet the president. They said 10,000 people came out to visit him, but there were actually more than that came out to visit him, but many were turned away. After the president was done speaking, and it was, I saw one sign, 10,000 people, I saw one sign there, and it was like CSUMB students greet President Clinton, or, you know, it was a very, very positive sign for him. That was the only one that was allowed to get in.
Yeah, it's grotesque that people are forced into a position to support this president.
I thought that was kind of censorship.
Because
you know?
The only alternative seems to be, the newt. You know, it's really...
Isn't it legal to carry a sign? I mean...
Well, in Santa Cruz, for instance, numerous people have been arrested for signs at the town clock. Dave Jacobs, who is now currently a wanted man in Santa Cruz, unless he's showed up in court in the last week and I haven't heard about it, he missed a court date in about a week ago with Red Top Robert Flory. Robert was sent to jail for contempt of court and was released, I understand, on Sunday a week ago. Contempt of court being that he would not do community service and pay a fine.
Actually, wasn't it that he had done community service for the organization he wanted to do community service for? And
well, he said he was doing his own.
And they didn't accept his version of community service?
That wasn't specifically the argument he made, though he has said that at different times. In actuality, he made the legal argument, you cannot force someone to do community service.
Sort of a contradiction in terms, would you
say?
Right,
it's community slavery, as some call it. Anyway, Wonton Dave, you're talking about signs being destroyed and signs being barred. Here in Santa Cruz, that has happened repeatedly for him. In fact, I don't think that he's already served his time on those, but he was arrested for harassed by the Parks and Rec Department and by the local police for his long vigil at the town clock after the Iraqi genocide in 1991 when Bush went to war there. And
yeah, I remember that.
He had a long vigil at the town clock that extended far beyond the Iraqi adventure, and the police, began to brutally harass him, and on some occasions his signs were destroyed, and that happened to us also at other tables. So it's not simply President Clinton, it's a long-standing tradition here in Santa Cruz.
Well, it just struck me as a strange twist of policy in United States of America, home of the free.
Yeah, well, it certainly is, and it's one that... appropriate.
Then on the panel, there was Clinton and Panetta and Samphar and Mineta and Carl Pister, Senator Boxer, there was one...
Smoke a joint, go to jail, Boxer.
our 5-foot senator from California.
Yeah, right. She stands tall.
I hear she carries a stool around with her when she is in the Senate so that she can stand up on the stand.
I knew she came out with a lot of shit, but I didn't realize she had her own stools. Well, forget that.
So here are all these different dignitaries on the panel. There's this one Hispanic woman, a single mom with two kids, who was an actual student. And she got up and was profusely thanking everybody, Clinton for coming, and Samphar and Panetta, and for creating this wonderful university on the Fort Ord campus, where, from what I hear, there's all kinds of lead and shrapnel military waste that they have no intention of cleaning up. They haven't even budgeted it to bring it up to minimum state standards. She claimed, I couldn't have done this without all the good student loans I have. Well, these exact same people have been out chopping student loans to death,
right.
So very few people can go to school anymore.
Rushing
college.
To the slaughterhouse. Who's going to get there first, or Clinton?
It was just weird.
Well, what's coming up that you're involved in that we should be aware of in the next week or two? There is a city council meeting tonight, by the way. I mean, tomorrow night, folks, if you're interested. I called, and there's not much on the agenda that I'm aware of, but if you want to see our silly council at work, you can go to that.
I think one of the interesting things that people should watch out for is the October 26th hearing in Judge Samuel Stevens' court regarding a local attorney and congressional candidate Ed Frye's taxpayer lawsuit regarding the Art Danners having paid Catherine Gardner, basically falsified her time cards for 4 months to the tune of somewhere between $30,000 and $40,000 of your money and mine. This what's expected to happen on the 26th, because Stevens basically in his last court appearance said that he was inclined to rule against the motion filed by the Board of Supervisors.
What that means is he was inclined to rule against a DA Art Danner and possibly open the way for a trial for Art Danner in January?
Yeah, we're talking about Art Danner. If Judge Stevens rules on the 26th, like he said he's inclined to rule, then Art Danner could be facing a jury trial in January for having embezzled $30,000+ from the taxpayers.
It would be a civil trial, however, not a criminal trial. Poor Art would not be able to sample his own jails, but he would be able to check out whether